It's time for Rebel Extra. This is your team, Las Vegas, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 364-1100. That's 364-1100. Now, live from the Finley Toyota Studios, it's Bernie Fratto and John Von Tobel.
Well, you probably already know this, but the Mountain West Conference features four of the top 10 college basketball arenas as far as elevation above sea level. But Wyoming is the clear number one as it weighs in at an altitude of 7,220 feet. But for historical perspective, well, the Wyoming-UNLV matchup, I believe, will always carry a unique characterization. Why? Well, the last time UNLV played in Laramie, it ended up being the final game of the Dave Rice era. And the last time UNLV played Wyoming was New Year's Eve here at the Thomas and Mack, and it featured the first Mountain West Conference win in the Marvin Menzies era. But tonight, throw everything out the window and start from scratch. You see, you had to see this game to believe it. The Rebels trailed by 20 at one point. They actually led by three with just under 4 minutes to go. And when UNLV, they had the final possession with 6.1 seconds left, trailing by one, there was no doubt in my mind that somehow Javon Mooring was going to have the ball in his hands and he was going to take another crazy, wild three-point shot. And he did. But there would be no miracle this time. And although we absolutely should applaud the effort, because what could have been a disaster ended up to be a pretty competitive game. Final score, Wyoming 66, UNLV 65. Rebels now 10-11 overall and 3-5 in Mountain West Conference play. Welcome back to another edition of Rebel Extra, the post-game show devoted to you, the fans and supporters of UNLV Runner Rebel Basketball. Rebel Extra is brought to you by our proud sponsors, Angel Park Legacy in Durango Hills, OV Sports' most complete golf course experiences in Las Vegas, Diamondback Land Surveying from Brick Walls to the Taj Mahal, Diamondback Land Surveying, your land surveying experts. 8-Ball Bail Bonds. If you had more fun at the game than the law allows, call 8-Ball Bail Bonds to get you out of jail. Pizza My Dear with a smoking lunch deal, a 12-inch pizza for only $5 with two locations to serve you. Go to pizzamydear.com. We come to you after every game this season, and we want to hear from you, folks. 364-1100. Give us a call. Be part of the action, or you can text your thoughts at 69187. Please preface your text with ESPN. Before I go any further, let me introduce my broadcast team. To my left, turning all the dials, keeping us glued together, is producer extraordinaire Bobby Machado. He'll also be taking all of your calls at 364-1100. And to my right, I'm joined by the gentleman. You hear him every day on Cofield and Company. That would be JVT, John Von Tobel. John, as I said, you really had to see this game to believe it. You could use cliches like it was a tale of two halves, whatever. There were a lot of lowlights in the first half and a lot of highlights in the second half, and we're going to get to all of them, including some individual surprises. Where would you like to start?
You stole my cliche. No, it was an entertaining game. I thought I was most impressed with what jumped out to me was Marvin Menzies' performance, I guess. I thought it was one of the better coach games, and he's done a great job all year long, but I thought he did a fantastic job today. And to get them back into it, it was an entertaining game, ultimately disappointing, but you did. You saw a lot of stuff that you would kind of like, especially going down the home stretch here in conference play.
I'll tell you, at halftime, it looked like this is going to be the Hindenburg. Amongst some of the lowlights, Wyoming had 14 more points in the paint. They led points in the paint 20-6, which I thought was critical. The Rebels needed to do a better job of scoring down low. Poyser in the first half, 0-6 from the field. Mooring, 0-2 from the field. UNLV only scored 8 points in the last 7 minutes and 45 seconds of the first half. And when Wyoming picked up the pace midway through the first half, the Rebels just simply didn't adjust. Then all of a sudden, the second half rolled around, and it was entirely a different storyline.
Yeah, the first half, we saw a whole bunch of what we didn't like about this team, especially at the beginning of the year. Really short possessions.
Right.
Taking deep threes, 2 seconds into the shot clock. Even then, you would see them, they would run up too quick. You would try to find some guy outside. It was just too rushed for them somewhat in the second half. But then when Menzies would get them to slow down, he would call them a timeout, like you mentioned, especially in the second half. When they started playing their pace, that's when they were more successful. They didn't need to go up and down.
It's exactly correct. But in the first half, you saw some of the bugaboos that have reared their head, not just in this season but in past seasons, long droughts. The Rebels missed 12 straight shots. Wyoming went on a 13 0 run mm-hmm. in the first 12 minutes of the game. Troy Baxter checks in, wastes no time in jacking up a long three. Yep. No passing, no bad possession. Tyrell Green, he was determined to get a couple threes early. Even Javon Mooring struggled, but at least he was playing hard. He was putting good pressure on the Wyoming guards. I didn't know what to expect in the second half. I did expect the Rebels to fight hard. You have to certainly believe that Coach Menzies and their staff got into this team, got them to show some pride. The numbers in the first half were alarming. 9 of 32 from the field, 28%. The Rebels shot 28% in the second half of their game Saturday night. So that's essentially a full game at 28%. You're not going to win when you do that. They were 4 for 4 from the free throw line, but only got there four times. 1 of 10 from three-point land. Yep. And any way you slice it, John, I still say to some degree this team is always going to be defined by their ability to make their three-point shots. It's what got the Rebels into overtime and essentially won the game for them Saturday. And in the first half, missing all those threes without the kind of spacing, the kind of ball movement, the kind of offensive flow you need, the Rebels struggled to get into their offensive set mightily. Give Wyoming some credit. They denied checking the ball. They must have listened to you on the radio a couple of weeks ago, because teams that deny checking the ball, obviously the Rebels struggle to get the ball moving side to side when he's guarded. Bottom line is this. They did everything you'd hope they wouldn't do, trailed by 20, but yet you have to applaud their effort.
Yeah, and you mentioned that this is a team that is going to be dependent sometimes on hitting those shots, especially outside shots, but you want those shots to come within the flow of the offense. You don't want them to be a second in after an offensive board and jacking that up. As you mentioned, you know, there was a lot more energy in the second half. A lot of that had to do with Zion Morgan. I thought Zion Morgan had a really, really great game, and he's been one of those guys that you kind of been clamoring for more minutes, because when the Rebels have their defensive struggles, he kind of comes in and gives them a spark. And tonight, he was definitely a big part of that run in the second half. I believe it was a big part of the 7-0 run.
Huge.
That really sparked him and really kept him in the game.
Zion Morgan checked into the game, started the second half, and I had to do a double take.
Yeah.
Because guess who didn't start the second half?
Jalen Poizer.
Now, you can't tell me you weren't a little shocked by that.
I was. When he checked in, I think it was about, 8 minutes left in the game?
8:30 to go.
Yeah.
Yes. Jalen sat. I mean, first of all, he only played 3 minutes in the second half. Yeah, but he didn't check in until 8:30 to go in the game.
Yeah, Jalen checked in the second half, and the commentators just go, okay, first time Jalen's checking in the half, and I kind of had the double take, and I, look back, and I was like, wow, really? He hasn't played that many minutes, and credit to Menzies, right? He has shown that he is fearless when it comes to just benching guys. If you're not performing, I will put you there, and you won't come back out. We saw Troy Baxter disappear for a while before he reemerged today.
Right.
You know, Tyrell Green has been relegated to the bench. He's not afraid to push different buttons because he wants to win these games, and you applaud him for it, because Jalen looked really hesitant. He looks like a shell of himself out there. I mean, there's possessions where there was one possession in the first half where he gets the ball, and it's him and Uche with one guy, and he can't even make the pass to the corner of the Uche, and instead he kind of sits for a second, drives, and ends up just floating up something that's just a junker shot, doesn't even go in. He does not look comfortable at all.
We're going to have to revisit the Tyrell Green, Jalen Poizer saga here later into the show. Let me just tease it by saying this. It was pretty obvious to me heading into Saturday's game, the big Rebel win over Air Force, that both Jalen and Tyrell were well on their way to elongated slumps. Heading into that game against Air Force, Poizer, in conference play, was only shooting 30% from the field and 27% from behind the arc. Tyrell Green, 21% from the field and 11% from behind the arc. Poizer, in his last two games, 4 of 20. Tonight he was 1 of 7, and Tyrell was 1 of 6. Poizer only played 18 minutes. Green, 17 minutes. Is there going to be a changing of the guard here?
Oh, I think there already has been. Now he has shown, Menzies has, somewhat to be stubborn, like when it came to Poizer at the point guard, right? It wasn't until the last 3 or 4 games where we've kind of seen him like, okay, Mooring's our guy. Let's start him. Let's see what he can do. I mean, now you're coming down the stretch. I think that you would probably see him, Poizer, go to the bench. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with seeing Zion Morgan, Jovan Mooring as a starting backcourt.
Here's why I pose the question that way, because heading into conference, we sort of agreed they're 13 games under their belt. Tyrell Green would have been the de facto MVP of this team.
Completely agree.
Jalen Poizer was still the alpha dog when it came to scoring. He was a leading scorer. He had a knack for scoring the ball one way or another. Wasn't always pretty. He's a talented player. We all know that talent doesn't always equate with experience, doesn't equate with consistency, doesn't equate with production, certainly doesn't equate with maturity, but Jalen Poizer proved to be a guy that could score. He's, for whatever reason now, that's left his game. The question is, does it return? How much rope does he have? I still think they're going to need Jalen Poizer and Tyrell Green, as the Rebels still have 11 games remaining in conference, and tonight was the first of five, what I consider to be an interesting five-game stretch. You go to San Jose State, they're no pushover anymore. You're going to face New Mexico here at the Thomas and Mack. They're going to be looking for revenge. Colorado State will be coming in. No Che Bobb, which I'm really sorry for. That's probably going to hurt attendance. And then you've got Nevada Reno, who's playing for first place tonight at Boise. So you've got an interesting five-game stretch. You're going to need all hands on deck. You play in these high-altitude games. You travel. You need guys. Now let's get to Zion Morgan, who I think is the storyline of the night. He starts in the second half, wastes no time in nailing back-to-back threes. He'd hit two threes all year, and he comes in and hits two threes back-to-back. Outstanding night for Zion Morgan. 12 points, 6 rebounds. But here's the key. Here's the key takeaway, John. Let me know if you see it the same way. He injected a certain energy and alpha dog mentality into the Rebels tonight, and there's not a doubt in my mind it was infectious. It was contagious. Zion Morgan did a lot of things that didn't show up in the box score, in addition to 12 key points.
Oh, of course, but I think a lot of his actions that showed up in the box score were really big, too. I mean, you mentioned the back-to-back threes. What about the missed three, followed up with the offensive board, and then finding a teammate? Or the, I believe, was it an inbounds where he steals the pass, goes up, completes a bucket, and gets the foul? I mean, he was awesome tonight in every facet, and they really, really needed that because they were flat for a while.
Poizer checked in, as we talked about, with 8:30 to go in the game. He was only in for a minute or two. He left the game. Zion checked back in. Immediately, it lights a fire under the Rebels again, brings more energy. Tyrell Green is fouled. Now, the Rebels are in the bonus. He misses the front end of a one-on-one, but on a loose ball, Okogorski gets it. Zion Morgan hustles, knocks the ball away from him. Somehow it ends up back in Tyrell Green's hands. This time, Tyrell Green made one, missed one. Rebels had the lead. I'm thinking to myself, if the Rebels win this game, that's the play I'm going to point to the most. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily going to show up in the scorebook, but it was that hustle-type play that where a guy finds a way to win a game for his team, even though you're not necessarily – if you can impact a game, even if you're not scoring – and Zion Morgan was scoring the ball tonight.
Yeah.
But if you can impact a game without scoring, he really injected a lot of fight into this team.
Yep, and it's something that this team has needed. I mean, Dwayne Morgan was a good role player in that, right?
Yes, he was. A good energy guy.
Great rebounder, energy guy, a great defensive guy. And they've needed it. Chris Clyburn's come in here and there and injected that, but he's kind of been up and down, especially his offensive game. They've been needing Zion, and especially when the other players in your backcourt aren't really performing on the offensive end and on the defensive end. They're nothing special, right? I mean, they need him big time, and he's balling out a little bit, which is cool to see, especially for a freshman.
Tough kid out of Chicago, paying some dividends. I hope he gets a lot more minutes as the Rebels continue conference play. UNLV falls 66-65 in Wyoming tonight in a game that you had to see it to believe it. 364-1100. We want to hear from you, Las Vegas. This is your team. The show is always better when we get the perspective of the fans who follow and support this team. So let's get to it. Let's go out to the phone lines. We're joined by Fernando. Fernando, thanks for checking in tonight. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, hey, guys. Hey, I was very proud in the effort from the Rebels in the second half, being down by 18. Was very, very good. And with 6.1 seconds left in the game, I was hoping we'd go for a 2-point shot. I believe it was a 3-point shot. Am I correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Refresh my memory, please. This year for the Mountain West Conference, are they taking all the teams?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
They are. At one time, the short answer is yes. And what I'm hoping, Fernando, is that the Rebels don't fall on the 8-9 line on Wednesday, because then they would have to play if they win the game, they'd play the number one seed the next day. So I'm hoping for a higher seed than 8. But answer to your question is yes.
Well, I'm very still optimistic about the season, and I'm still hoping for 18 wins. And
really?
Yes,
okay, realize you're 10-11 right now.
Okay, I'm going to try to stick to it.
And they'd have to go 8-3 down the stretch to do that.
I know it's going to be pretty hard, but I enjoy the show, guys. Have a good night.
All right, thanks, Fernando. I appreciate
Fernando's
optimism.
That's refreshing, I guess.
A fan is short for fanatic. We're all fanatics. You have to be a fan. Why are we here, John? We do this because we're fans.
Yeah, Bobby,
the cynical Bobby Machado giving a certain hand sign. Well, that's why we love Bobby, for his honesty. No, he wasn't flipping me off, folks. Bobby does flip me off a lot, but it's a term of endearment. Now, Bobby knows I love him. Let's go back to Javon Mooring, the guy that's become a fan favorite. He's won me over 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago. He was a bit of an out-of-control guy. Now he's proven to be a highly effective point guard. He's not necessarily consistent, but he can find the open man, make plays for teammates. He'll break you down off the dribble. The dude can shoot threes. Even tonight, John, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. The Rebels are trailing 59-56. They tie the game. How? Javon Mooring drains a three-pointer. Had to be from 30 feet.
Of course.
4 minutes, 20 seconds.
With the clock winding down, too,
yeah,
by the way.
Buzzer.
Yeah.
It was a buzzer. As a matter of fact, somebody had, I think it was Jalen Poizer.
Oh, it was Jalen
Poizer. Had thrown up an air ball three.
Yep.
Somehow the Rebels got the ball. It ends up in Mooring's hands. There was all of a sudden about 3 seconds left on the shot clock, and I'm wondering, does he know? Of course he does. This is what he does, man. Why shoot earlier in the clock? When you're Javon Mooring, you back up to 30 feet, bank when possible, and just let it go.
Wave off any screener.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I love the guy. He's got a lot of dog in him, and he is going to help this team win games. He's not going to escape his nature. You are what you get. What you see is what you get with Javon Mooring. Is he talented? Yes. Does he lack experience? Yes. Does he lack maturity? Yes. Does he lack consistency? Yes. Does he lack production? No. What he does is come through usually when you need it the most. And by the way, when Javon Mooring is not jacking up threes, he plays hard, John. You'd agree with that, wouldn't you?
Oh, of course. And I thought it was really good defensive effort for him tonight. And he actually had a really good
point.
Yeah, he had a good defensive effort, and he had a key foul he pulled off of one of their guards. No, he pulled a foul, or he got one of Wyoming's backcourt players to draw a foul. And, of course, my notes aren't loading up here. But late in the game, believe, as this is awesome radio. Okay, it's not in there. But either – oh, Lieberman. There we go. There it is. It's right there. Lieberman gets a foul, 66-65, 40 seconds left. He draws. It was a stupid foul that got tangled up. And it was like a little play like that, right, where it just showed how much just effort he was bringing in the night. And now I'm glad that Fernando brought up the final possession, because I wanted to ask you what you thought of it. Because granted, yes – you know, you probably expected a deep three-pointer.
I really did.
But, in the post-game, you hear Menzies say you had three coaches telling him, take it to the rack, you're in the double bonus, try to force them into something, try to get as close a shot as possible. I'm just curious what you thought of the shot selection.
First of all, Allen Edwards did what Dave Pilipovich didn't, and that is put someone on the inbound passer. He put Herndon, who's 6'9", who's probably got a wingspan of about 10 feet, on Tyrell Green. Therefore, you disrupt his vision, you disrupt and alter a possible passing lane, and the Rebels not only have to go 94 feet in 6.1 seconds, but you hopefully get your feet set or at least find yourself in a position to get off a shot that has a chance of going in. I'm not talking about a 32-foot three-pointer that you bank in. I'm talking about hopefully trying to get some kind of shot. I don't believe the Rebels had that in their arsenal. I just believe they were going to put it in Mooring's hands, get up the floor as quickly as you can. He is going to get his shot off.
Of course.
I don't care if he's being guarded by Gary Payton. He's going to get his – he will find a way to get his shot off and not have it blocked. And he's only about, what, 5'11"?
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen his shot blocked. Have you?
No.
He gets it off.
Yep.
So it hit the front of the rim. You know, it wasn't the worst-looking thing you'd ever seen. But I got to tell you, I'm so whacked out by watching this team. I half expected the Rebels to win another buzzer beater. I just did. Mm-hmm. I said, all of a sudden, what do we got? These cardiac kids here who win in the most improbable way, in the most unpredictable manner. But again, when you peel back how the second half unfolded and Zion Morgan's incredible, really sort of coming out party tonight, he got 24 minutes. That's a lot. Made the most of, by the way, we haven't even mentioned Christian Jones. Quietly, another solid effort, a double-double, 14 points, 12 rebounds, and you got to love Christian Jones' presence in the paint, because when he wants to, he could throw some of those Wyoming guys around like ragdolls.
Oh, especially, there was a couple of possessions where Hayden Dalton got lined up on him.
Yes.
And he was like, I weigh about 50 pounds more than you almost in the pure muscle. I'll just take you to the rack each time. So they had trouble stopping him, and, you know, Christian's become a lot more a lot more consistent with his game down low and a lot more physical.
I think he's very
He's getting healthy, too. I think that's what's, you know, obviously the injury.
Everybody is healthy right now.
Which is a good thing.
Other than Dwayne Morgan, who's, you know, obviously out for the season. There aren't any, you know, nagging ankles or anything like that going on. And Christian Jones looks good to me. He's solid. By the way, Nevada taking care of business tonight at Boise State, winning, I believe, 73-57 was the final. Congratulations to the Nevada UNR.
This game, when this show started, there was like a four-point game.
76-57 is the final. So Nevada takes the lead in the Mountain West Conference. They're now 6-2. Boise falls to 5-3. But this is a really bunched-up conference when you've got San Diego State, four losses already when they had two the entire time last year. We want to talk a lot more about the second half because there were some key junctures as the game went from 18 to 13 to 10 to 7.
ESPN.
And we're going to get to all that, including more of your calls at 364-1100. In case you're just tuning in or you've been a sleeper on Mars, Rebels fall tonight 66-65 to Wyoming. And I hope you didn't turn the game off at halftime because they were down by 18 and a half and it wasn't looking good. By the way, when we come back on the other side of a break, we're going to be catching up with Mark Anderson of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He was at the game tonight in Laramie. He's John Von Tobel. I'm Bernie Fratto. Bobby Machado is producing and turning all the dials, and we want more of your calls when we come back at 364-1100. Plenty of show left, folks, so don't go away. You're listening to Rebel Extra.
Text the show by sending ESPN to 69187 or give us a call at 364-1100. This is Rebel Extra.
Back on Rebel Extra, ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM. Bernie Fratto, John Von Tobel, Bobby Machado producing. Give us a call, 364-1100, and join in the action. UNLV falls tonight at Laramie, Wyoming, 66, UNLV 65. At this time, we're joined by the gentleman who was at the game, the beat writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Mark Anderson. Thanks for your time tonight. And before we get started, I want to ask you the psyche of Jalen Poizer, who only got 3 minutes in the second half as he watched Zion Morgan have a coming-out party.
Yeah, I think it's been off for a while. I mean, I just see a player who just doesn't seem to be playing with a lot of confidence. I mean, he did a big three. That was a shot that you're just having to throw it up there at that point and it happened to go in, which he's done a number of times this season. But I don't know. I just feel like him and Tyrell Green, I just don't feel like they're there right now. And, you know, and I give Menzies credit. You know, he went with a freshman, and Zion Morgan gave him the boost that he needed in that second half.
We were talking about the final possession. I'm curious, one, what your thoughts were on Jovan's decision for the early pull-up, and what did Menzies have to say in the postgame?
Menzies said that the call was for Jovan to drive the length of the floor, to try to get to the rim, at least draw a foul, and maybe even pass off if they had Christian Jones as an option. And then Maureen said what happened was he drove down the court, and the defender, Justin James, backed off of him and took away the drive. So he felt like he needed to pull up at that point. Now, he admitted in that he should have taken probably another step or two, and Mindy said the same thing, at least get a closer look. So, but that's how that broke down.
Mark, for most of the first half, as Wyoming built their lead, they pressured UNLV's guards. They denied checking the ball. The Rebels had poor spacing, pretty much non-existent ball movement. They were getting out-hustled. They were getting any post-up points. Something changed at halftime. Do you have any idea what Coach Menzies' message was to the team at halftime?
Well, the big thing is they switched to man. That was the biggest thing that they, the biggest change they made was switching to man, and they got him better, playing better defense, and I think it helped lead to a better offensive game too. And then once, you know, Morgan came in and scored, I think, 8 quick points over in the second half.
Yes,
that kind of got them all going too, and they got him back in the game. I mean, it was 18 at halftime, and then you look at the score, and suddenly it's 13 in like 2 or 3 minutes, and at that point, they had to feel like they were right back in the game.
Going back to the thing with Jalen Poizer and essentially his lack of confidence again, Zion Morgan performed admirably today. You think there's any chance that we see the shocking move of Jalen moving to the bench and a guy like Zion coming and cracking the starting lineup?
I asked Menzies that after the game tonight, and he wasn't ready to commit one way or the other. And understandably so, he's not going to make that decision right after this game. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I mean, he might send Jalen back out there to tell him that, you know, he's got to play better if he wants to keep the starting job, sort of give him one last chance. But I think the leash is going to be short with him now.
Mark, somehow the most incredulous statistic, the Rebels garnered 47 rebounds tonight against 33 for Wyoming. And Wyoming, I believe, was the number one rebounding team in the Mountain West Conference. How did that happen?
Right.
How did that happen in your view?
You know, that's, I know you're right. Wyoming is the number one rebounding team. But one thing that their coach, Alan Edwards, made a point of a couple days ago is their offensive rebounding has been a little suspect. And that's, if you look at the breakdown, UNLV had 17 offensive rebounds and Wyoming had 6. It's just UNLV was more aggressive on the offensive end. And a lot of it, too, was UNLV missed a lot of close-in shots and got some second and third chances on, you know, and they kind of, I don't want to say padded the stats there, but in some ways they did. But it was impressive to come in here and out-rebound them by 14. I mean, that was remarkable. And then, you know, you look at that and you're like, you kind of wonder how they didn't win the game.
When you look at that statistic by itself, although when the reality sets in, when you realize the Rebels missed 16 more three-pointers tonight and they missed another 39 shots overall, which means they've missed 90 shots in two games, but you do have to applaud the effort. So I know you're under deadline and you've got to get back to work here. So as we wrap this up, what was the mood of the team and the coaching staff afterward? You're never going to like the way you lose. You get on a plane, you lick your wounds, and you're going to play San Jose State Saturday, another road game, back-to-back road games. Did they take any solace in this, or are they angry? Anybody punching lockers? They wanted to win this. It was within their grasp. Or is it like, well, you know, we did the best we could? What? I'm curious to get my finger on the pulse of the psychodynamic of this team right now.
They're really down. You could see it in their faces. Menzies was really down. This is about as down as I've seen Menzies after a game. You know, even after other losses, you've seen he's kind of remained, you know, kind of kept a sense of humor about him. And tonight he was a combination of frustrated and angry and disappointed. And I think that's kind of went for all the players. And, you know, we watched them all. I watched them out of the locker room, and, you know, you could see in their faces the disappointment. And Maureen said that they felt like this was the game they would get away. And I think that's the biggest disappointment for this team, is they had every chance to win this game. And it could have created some great momentum, especially going to San Jose State on Saturday. If they could have maybe swept two road games and moved up the Mountain West standings a little bit and made some noise. So it was a big loss for them.
All right, two final questions, and we'll let you run. The first one is, do you expect them, the pattern has been coming off a loss, to come back and get a win? Do you expect them to take care of business Saturday in San Jose?
I do, but this San Jose State's better this season.
Oh,
this is
better.
Not going to be a gimme. Yeah, even if they won tonight, it wouldn't have been a gimme. I mean, there's no guarantee, you know, he's going to go there and win that game. I think San Jose is going to give him a tough game. Brandon Clark's a really good player.
Yes.
He's playing out of his mind
only
right now.
Only a sophomore,
now, so,
too. Yeah.
Yeah, he's only a sophomore, and he's reading up on him. And there's a kid who came on late in his senior year in high school, and so hardly anyone knew about him. So, you know, I think he's going to give them all sorts of trouble. But if they can go win, then you know, they come back home, and they got a chance to maybe still do some things in conference.
Final question, it's sort of a gratuitous one. Rebels only 8 of 17 from the free throw line in the second half. Much will be made of that. Perhaps people might think if they just would have made their free throws, they could have turned this into a W. I'm really not sure. Did the altitude finally start to bother them? Did they get some sea legs, you know, at the end of the game? Was that it?
No, not because Wyoming had the same problem. Wyoming missed free throws. Wyoming was 6 of 13 for the game from the free throw line.
Right, right.
So, I mean, both teams, and Miami missed some layups. I mean, that's something I'm trying to remind myself, that Wyoming also had chances to extend the lead or take control earlier, and couldn't do it themselves. So both teams seem to struggle down the end, and it's possible it caught up with UNLV a little bit. I don't know. UNLV in some ways seemed to get stronger as the game went on, so I didn't really read that into it.
All right, appreciate your time, Mark. We'll catch up with you after San Jose on Saturday. Safe travels.
Thanks a lot, Bernie. You take care.
It's Mark Anderson, beat writer of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He was at the game tonight at 4-degree Laramie, Wyoming. You know, I tell you, the Mountain West Conference, John, we both know it's not a stellar conference. But some of these road venues are not easy to get to, and they're just not easy to play in. And as I mentioned in the open, four of the top 10 altitude teams, Colorado State, New Mexico, and Reno are the other three. You play in altitude, and if you're not accustomed to it, I think it can have a residual effect.
Oh, of course. And I thought you saw it in the first half more than you saw it in the second half with UNLV. They looked sluggish. Some of their shots, when they took them early, were hitting front rim, you know, which is a sign not putting enough strength behind your shots. I thought it affected them at first, and they kind of got used to it. And along the line of Menzies having a really good game, I thought one of the sneaky cool moves that he had this game, do you remember this giant 5-minute delay when they were trying to figure out the 4 seconds?
He didn't have
any UNLV player standing whatsoever the entire time. He had guys sitting in their stools. I mean, even the broadcasters are mentioned like, oh, you got five Wyoming players standing out here ready to go the entire time UNLV sitting and resting up. And just another move for him, just a conniving, sneaky move, just any way to give yourself an edge.
And he was drawing up offensive plays and defensive plays and preparing for what might come. I got a kick out of – and obviously, look, Wyoming players, they may live in that, but I don't know if you ever really totally get used to it. When Zion started the second half, got 8 quick points, and all of a sudden the Rebels had a bounce in their step, and there was a little bit better ball movement and certainly much better energy. All of a sudden, Allen Edwards at the 17:30 mark, what does he do? He substitutes all 5 Wyoming players at once like it's some rec league game. I don't know if I've ever seen that. I'm sure it's happened, but I don't recall seeing that in a Division I college basketball game. I've seen it in a CYO game.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've seen Steve Fisher do it maybe once or twice. But no, you're right. It's fun. It's an amazing sight to watch when you watch 5 bodies go out the floor. You replace them with another 5. But hey, when you have the bodies, you might as well do it, right? Keep them
That's
fresh.
Right. Back out to the phone lines. We're joined by Kevin. Kevin, thanks for checking in tonight at Rebel Extra. What's going on, my man?
What's up, guys? I tuned in a little late. Hey, who does UNLV play next? I'm sorry.
At San Jose State, Saturday afternoon.
All right, so if you and John were the head coach and head assistant at San Jose State, and after your show right now you had to prepare for San Jose State, how would you scout UNLV? What would you tell your players? Like, this guy has this. What would your scouting report be on UNLV?
Well, I pressure the backcourt, deny checking the ball, which is what they do, make UNLV start their offense higher. And I'd want to get out on the break after missed baskets and after made baskets. I think the Rebels are sloppy when they have to run, frankly. So I'd want to force tempo against UNLV.
Yeah, completely agree. And when Jovan, when you force him to make quick decisions, he's shown that sometimes he'll mess up. You double him off of screens, and you got to make him actually, all right, I got to pass, get rid of it. I think I completely agree with Bernie in that, and they are. They're sloppy when they run. They have the unforced errors, throwing out of bounds. I think they're a lot better in the half court, so I think that would be the scouting game plan.
How about you, Kevin? How might you scout UNLV?
I don't know. I mean, I think you guys mentioned pick up full court and try to get Mooring, maybe get him going, right? That's what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, when Jovan plays fast, he plays out of control sometimes.
Right. I mean, it sounds about right. I always think that Division I players shouldn't really have an issue getting the ball over half court and at least starting an offense. I mean, they're there for a reason, but that last shot he took, you'd think, I guarantee Menzies or some assistant told him to, take the ball to the basket, make the refs make a call, but in the course of a game, sometimes you just got to come down and fire it, I guess.
Well, and I think Wyoming did enough to slow the ball down before he got to the timeline. So by the time he got to the timeline, there was probably only 3 seconds left, and he had to be cognizant of making sure he at least got some sort of shot off. But look, at this point, this is who these guys are. I didn't expect anything any different. This is what they do. They shoot threes. When the threes go in, they're competitive. When they don't go in, they're not. It's as simple as that. In the first half, the Rebels were 1 of 10 from behind the arc, and they trailed by 18 points. In the second half, they weren't much better. They were 4 of 11, but thanks to their defense, they got back in the game. Now, I know that sounds simplistic, but the reality of it is, I know this for sure, as Jovan Mooring goes, the Rebels go.
Yep.
And as the 3 points drop, the Rebels live and die by the 3-point shot, and that's just the way this version of this team is.
Yeah, hey, it's going to be interesting, that Mountain West tournament. Last thing I'll say is, Menzies, he's a professional. He's going to keep this team together, guys. And who knows? I mean, who knows what could happen down there on Maryland Parkway at the Thomas and Mack in March? Like you said, you start making, you go 7-8 for 13 one game on threes, you steal a game and you play the next day. It could happen.
I think it's a wide open Mountain West. Thanks for checking in, Kevin. Always appreciate it.
Yeah, the top, I don't think the top is very far from the bottom. UNR's pulling away with the conference. I think they are a little bit, maybe head and shoulders. They've
beaten everybody
above
the rest. But Fresno State. Yeah. Fresno State's beaten them twice. There's no shame in that. I think Fresno State's got a lot of alpha dogs. Credit Rodney Terry. Whatever, you know, whatever he assembles, they get after it. You have to you watch Fresno State. You really appreciate their approach. I think Fresno State has the best physical attitude of any team in the Mountain West Conference, and that includes better than San Diego State, who clearly is down this year. But even last year, I saw that final game, and you know, Fresno State was your Mountain West Conference tournament champion last year. They went to the tournament. They hung with Utah for the better part of 40 minutes. They did lose by 10 in the first round of the tournament, but they're doing it again. They've got an outstanding backcourt. It's not so much the talent. It's the what they get out of their talent. And, I you have to credit Rodney Terry. Fresno State's lucky to have him. I got to believe he's not there much longer because he's produced such great results at Fresno State. Look at what they were before Rodney Terry got there.
Yeah, you got some good coaches in the Mountain West, I think. Rodney Terry, Musselman, obviously Fisher.
Steve Fisher, sure.
But to Kevin's point of the Mountain West Conference tournament, yeah, I don't think two to the bottom of the league really is not that far apart. It's a big muddled mess. You could see some upsets, I believe, in the Mountain West tournament, not even just strictly to UNLV. I think you'll see some lower seeds up and some bigger seeds in the Mountain West. I don't think it's out of the
question.
Because
I don't think there's that big of a disparity. Let's take a look at this. Fresno State, the only team to have beaten in Reno, they've beaten them twice. Well, guess who beat Fresno State? San Jose State, who's UNLV's next opponent. So I don't know how you look at transitive property. You look at USC. They're crushing UCLA tonight. They're up by 11, and they just look to be the better team, the more physical team, the angrier team, the more determined team. Wyoming took them to overtime earlier in the year and frankly had them beat and lost on a last-second shot. Who knows how this shakes out? Look what happened tonight with Georgia Tech and Florida State. Kentucky gets beat. Kansas gets beat. Really, when you shake it out, I don't know that you know who the – I don't know if you can really determine who the upper echelon is in college basketball right now, because as soon as they become number one, they fall, you know, the very next game. Let's go back out to the phone lines, and we're joined by another Kevin. Kevin, thanks for checking in tonight. How are you?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How y'all doing, man?
Good, sir. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I watched the rest of the Rebel game tonight, and the only thing I saw was the missed free throws. Yeah.
Kevin, it looked like Kevin had something to do, huh? You got caught. Yeah, Kevin, get off the phone!
Call back, Kevin. It's all good. Look, yes, the Rebels missed 9 free throws in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
For the game, 12 of 21, 57%. Not one of your better efforts, but I feel like we're almost splitting hairs on that, because the fact that the Rebels made this a game, what my biggest takeaway is the way they responded when they were down.
Yeah.
And from the jump in the second half, the game went from 18 to 13 in a heartbeat. It went from 13 to 10. 10 to 7, 7 to 6, 6 to 3, and all of a sudden Javon Mooring jacks up a, you know, 82-footer again for another 3. They might win this game. The Rebels, at that moment, the look in their eyes was, to me, the look of a team that was confident. Mm-hmm. And a team that didn't have any fear, a team that didn't have any trepidation. They were going to play their game. Defensively, they stepped up. Offensively, their possessions got better. You started to see more ball movement. You saw better looks at the basket. You saw second, third, fourth chances. As a matter of fact, there was a lid on the rim. How many bunnies? How many tip-ins? How many, you know, shots right under the basket did the Rebels miss tonight? To me, that cost them more than whatever free throws cost them. You know, I'm perusing my notes right now. There was one particular possession where I counted 4 or 5 missed shots, a couple of missed threes. Rebels got the rebounds, missed a couple of putbacks, and Tyrell Green missed a three. They had 5 shots in one possession and couldn't score, but you could see the fight in their eyes. And I think at this point, if you can get that out of the Rebels, that's going to have to be good enough for now.
Yeah, they were awesome on the offensive end when it comes to rebounding. But, I mean, it's hard to look at a game when you lose by 1 point and not look at missed free throws, especially down the stretch, and think that might have been the cause of why you lost this game. I mean, with the Lieberman foul that I mentioned earlier, Jovan draws the foul. He gets 2 shots. He only hits 1. That's 40 seconds left. It's 66-65, and that's your final score. So, I mean, you can look at it and be disappointed, but I'm with you. When you overcome an 18-point deficit, that is a positive. But those missed free throws, I mean, they definitely would have helped.
Another positive, the Rebels were in the bonus with 12 minutes to go in the game. They did make the most. If they got to the line, the Rebels did shoot 17 mm-hmm. free throws in the second half. They just missed too many. Again, UNLV falls tonight at Wyoming, 66-65. We're going to take our final break in the evening. We come back, we'll wrap things up, look at some numbers and some additional individual performances, and look ahead to San Jose State. So don't go away, folks. You're listening to Rebel Extra.
Now, back to Rebel Extra on ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM.
Wrapping it up on Rebel Extra, ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM. Bernie Fratto, John Von Tobel, Bobby Machado producing. Rebels fall tonight at Wyoming, 66-65. But, John, we saw a lot of things tonight that we had not seen in the past, including Chekna showing a little mid-range game.
Oh, it was awesome. First half, like you mentioned, Rebels up, or down, excuse me, 5-2-4.
Four, correct.
Yep, and you get him on the little elbow, a little pop, and he hits, I believe, his first mid-range jumper of the season. I don't really remember.
15-footer, I don't remember making it.
Yeah, I don't remember him even attempting one. So, look, one of the more fun things to watch with this team every single game is the development of Shake Ndombele from game to game. He seems to get better. It is just fun to watch him. If he can extend his game out that far, whoo, watch out in 3 years.
It's amazing how one guy can make a difference. Lewis Adams, the guard for Wyoming, hits two threes early. He had a real nice night, 15 points, 3-for-3 from three-point land. He didn't play in the game here at the Thomas and Mack. Let's go back. Let's revisit a couple of things. Zion Morgan has his coming out party tonight. So when you look at Zion, when you look at Jovan Mooring, you look at Chekna, and you start to look at the building blocks and the future of how this program might look on a go-forward basis, there really are a lot of positives. One of the nice things about UNLV basketball in its current state is that nobody's going to bolt for the NBA next year, obviously, for obvious reasons. And you've got a lot of young underclassmen. So for the first time in a while, you could very well see players that are on the floor now, beyond this roster and on the floor and contributing, 2, 3, maybe even 4 years from now. And I think when you build that kind of critical mass and Coach Menzies backfills in, he's got a couple of big men on the horizon from Florida that might come here. And all of a sudden you start to see a picture of the city on the hill, and guys like Zion and Jovan and certainly Chekna Ndombele getting extremely valuable experience.
Experience, and the fact that when you watch them, they not even just Jovan, not even just Chekna, even Zion, all these players are showing individual development and growth. So it makes you feel better,
growth
too.
Growth is a good word.
You know, and it makes you feel better as a fan of the program, because now you realize that you have a coaching staff in place right now who not only can actually do on-the-floor coaching, but they can develop these players, it seems like, position by position, player by player. Excuse me. So you not only have confidence in the young talent, but you also have confidence in the staff that they'll be able to grow with them and make them better.
You know, I think there should be a lot of confidence in this staff. Marvin Menzies, again, has proven, as you mentioned off-air before we signed on, this perhaps might have been Coach Menzies' best coaching effort of the season when you consider the arc of this game and the way they fell behind early, and he moved enough chess pieces around and, you know, experimented with some different combinations and certainly some different rotations and showed some faith in some guys that, frankly, hadn't had a lot of experience to this point in Division I college basketball. And all of a sudden now, guys getting a baptism by fire and getting very good production in the meantime, on the road, in a fairly hostile environment. By the way, if I'm not mistaken, Wyoming is 11-1 at home this year. I think their only loss was to Reno. So a decent team with a better-than-average record. Not a great team, but a decent team in a program that's had success. Wyoming 2 years ago with Josh Adams, they won the Mountain West Conference tournament and advanced.
Yep. Hey, you know, I thought it was really impressive, especially when you come back from 18 on the road. I mean, that by itself is a massive accomplishment. And to have them in it at the final buzzer, it speaks volumes for them. And again, you know, there were times where you'd call a timeout, UNLV would go, and all of a sudden out of that timeout, 7-0 run. I mean, he did, I thought, a phenomenal job. And game to game, he's shown he's awesome. And improvement, not only on the individual level, but on the team level, defensively, they've gotten a lot better from game one. And the fact that they're catching on to just switching defenses every single possession, I mean, Menzies is coaching them up, and he's doing it really well.
The Rebels had three excellent defensive sets in the last 5 minutes of the game, the one I took notice of the most. Wyoming had the ball for a final possession. Jovan
missed a free throw. 40.2 seconds left in the game. At that point, it was 66-65. Wyoming gets the ball with 33 seconds to go. I wrote down in my notes, can UNLV get a stop here? They got their stop. So, on the road in Laramie, where the Rebels only managed 57 points last year with alleged NBA talent on the floor, the Rebels had a chance to win this game with their clutch player, Javon Mooring, and the ball in his hands. And after trailing by as many as 20, you have to say to yourself, all right, I'm going to look at this as glass half full. John, you've got the final word tonight, my man.
Impressive performance in terms of energy and in terms of effort, especially in the second half. But again, let's see how you do it. Second half, you put one half together. Put a whole game together. That's been the issue. Like you said, you win a game, you follow it up with a loss. Usually the loss, they follow that up with another win. So let's see if you can take this second half, use it against San Jose State, put 40 minutes together, and then we'll talk about maybe stringing another performance together, maybe getting consecutive wins in conference play.
Well said, John. You lose to Utah State, you come back, you go on the road again, back-to-back, and you beat New Mexico at the Pit. You lose a home game to San Diego State, you come back with an impressive double overtime win at against Air Force. You lose at Wyoming tonight, you come back Saturday, 2 o'clock against San Jose State. We'll see what happens, and I'm actually looking forward to it. That's going to do it, folks, for tonight's edition of Rebel Extra. On behalf of my broadcast team, producer extraordinaire Bobby Machado and John Von Tobel, I'm Bernie Fratto, bidding you good night. As I said, up next, the Rebels travel to San Jose State. Tip-off, 2 o'clock Saturday against a much-improved Spartan team. So we'll see you then. In the meantime, tonight's final score, Wyoming Cowboys 66, UNLV Running Rebels 65. Good night, folks. Thanks for listening. And go Rebels.